This is RSBNB Update, episode 571, recorded Thursday, June 9th, 2016, in Glorious Bugs. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for RSBNB Update. Tanis is joining Dave and myself this week.
Hi, everybody.
Tanis was last on, I think, when we were talking about Invention and... Were you on for the God Wars Dungeon or no? I think just Invention.
I think Invention and the February...
The February subsequent patch to Invention.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. And of course, Dave is here this week.
Howdy.
As per usual, as the young ones these days say. I don't know. That's just what I hear.
You're very accurate. I just find it funny the way I never really heard you say that sort of stuff.
Well, I mean,
that's always entertaining.
Yeah. I mean, I get all my young stuff like that from Tyler, who sent in a question this week.
Well, there you go.
He does that kind of thing.
You have your contacts.
Yeah. So 6606 February. I mean June 6th, 2006. Falador Massacre. A week after the release of Construction into Game, and oh boy, did we have a major event happen in RuneScape. Perhaps, probably the biggest bug abuse ever in game history. So this is, of course, referring to the Falador Massacre. You guys were both around then, I assume, yes?
Yes, I was around, as everyone probably knows by now, because I feel like I say it like three times every episode. Started in 2004, really liked the construction update. However, I was not present in-game during said massacre.
Yeah,
I was actually on vacation, and I did not have access to a computer. So yeah, but I heard about it, so...
Yeah, it happened in the wee hours in the morning for me. How about you, Tanis? Did your account exist?
Well, this is what's interesting. No, actually, I started in 08, but within a month of playing, I was very aware of the Valley Massacre, and this was 2 years removed, and it was still something that was talked about, kind of, you know, taking on a life of its own. You know, 2 years later, when I joined... people are still talking about it, so that's
how infamous it was, among other things that were happening with construction. Another thing brought about by the construction update was sudden death syndrome. Players would be randomly dying outside Tears of Guthix, just to name another one. But of course, Falador Massacre is the one that everyone remembers. So basically, a bit of background as to what happened with this. So on June 6th, a player named Cursed You got 99 construction and was having a house party in Rimington. And inside this house party, you can imagine that a whole boatload of players were gathered because, well, I mean, no one had ever really seen what a house at level 99 construction would look like, as you can imagine. And then after that, you know, all the festivities in there, PvP mode was on. And for some odd reason, he expelled everyone out of the house with, you know, the standard expel visitors button. And basically what this did was it allowed the PvP mode that was enabled inside the house to continue inside the main game world. And as you can imagine, this is where the Falador Massacre got its start. It started in Rimington, made its way north to Falador, and inevitably through Falador, and then ultimately ended around Edgeville. Players, of course, killed everywhere along the way, and the idea behind it was that there was a number of players who were involved in this, but one player in particular named Duriel321 had the ability to basically PvP anyone around him, pick up all the items, and then just claim them as his own. And there's also some internal debate as to whether or not Duriel was able to use the items and abilities that people he was killing had equipped. So, for example, Let's say you'd have an ancient staff and were casting Ice Barrage, and then Duriel would attack you. He would be able to gain that ability. I'm not sure if that actually happened during the event, but it's something Jagex did duplicate here. So that was new to me with regard to this. So obviously lots of GP and valuable rares lost that day. And then every June 6th, it's commemorated by players in various ways. And this year, 10 years after the fact, we have the ultimate in terms of commemoration being celebrated by Jagex itself. So this was the game update this week, believe it or not, which I don't know about you guys, but it was kind of shocking to me.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I remember looking at the post, whenever the update came out, and honestly, the first thing I thought, it looked like
April Fool's, right?
April Fool's posts, exactly.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, this seems kind of off the charts. It's kind of funny. And then, you know, I was reading through it, and I soon found out that it was like, okay, they're actually serious. And then it really was the nail in the coffin at the bottom after they sort of buffed this big event and, you know, they're like proud of it. And then at the bottom, they're like, well, cheating is very serious. It's like, okay, well, if it is, then why are you sort of glorifying it? And it was just very odd to me, especially that they're basically, I mean, you could see it as two ways, but they're sort of celebrating one of their biggest flub-ups, and like, I would be embarrassed about that. Like, why would I want to celebrate one of my biggest mistakes in company history? And, you know, it wasn't necessarily a happy thing, but I think that's kind of what everybody is feeling. I don't think anyone was like, oh, this is awesome. I think everybody was sort of just like, wait, what? Are you serious? Like, just kind of odd that they would really celebrate something like this. And, I mean, one can call it just a lack of content for the week or whatever.
This had to have been planned by a good amount of time in the lead up to this week's update, because I mean, when this first happened, when the update hit, there were notifications saying Cursed U is getting 99 construction in 30 minutes, World 111 Remington 20 minutes, 10 minutes. So I mean, there were in-game notifications, and they replayed it to the exact time, so much so as actually having the house party and then ejecting everyone from there to Falador to experience the PvP of the area. Wow. So, I mean, it was...
Now, this might be up for debate, and I'm not completely educated on the whole scenario, but one could argue that they sort of knew this was going to happen, meaning the people that did it. You know, because as I remember, construction wasn't very, like, whenever Cursed U got 99, it was like he was ahead by a long shot, and he was like, you know, there was only a few players that were that high. So I'm wondering if he sort of did some experiences and just kind of tried it out, maybe on like a friend that would say hush hush about it, and then it's like, okay, well, here, check this out. When I get 99, I'm gonna have 200 people in my house. I'm gonna get it and then kick everybody out, and then it'll be a free-for-all and we can all cash in, because it seems kind of odd for him to just expel everybody unless he just logged out. It seems a little, like, premeditated. I don't know, though.
Yeah, well, and, I mean, construction was out for a week at the time, so, I mean, this is going back to a time when the game itself was more primitive and the development cycle of the game was more primitive. So whether or not they could have missed that for a week, I don't know.
Well, either that, or if they did find it, they might have been on their list. But like you said, back then, they weren't cranking out updates every week. They weren't throwing in hot fixes every 2 days and, you know, stuff like that. It usually, if something happened like that, unless it was like super severe and they needed rollbacks, you know, it could have waited a week or 2 weeks before they actually started patching, you know, significant updates, especially on the magnitude of an entire new skill. So that's also something I guess we could consider. But
yeah, Tanis, you were going to say something along the way?
Yeah, I mean, you may have something there, Dave, with because, I mean, Cursed U was banned, but I have never, like, in my research, when I was looking this up, could find anything that he participated in. Like, I could not find him actually participating in the massacre itself.
Right.
And it was somewhat localized. Like, I don't think he would have known ahead of time, because the glitch, a lot of people have the the false belief that it originated in the combat arena, but that's not true.
It
was
in the
scouring pool in the portal room. And it was basically – that acted as like – that combined with throwing people out while they were in the like scouring pool was like a forced teleport where the glitch happened.
So you're saying that when he was looking in at perhaps the Falador teleport spot through the scrying pool, and then when he was expelled, that actually sent him to Falador with PvP mode enabled?
Yes. Yes, that's the way that I understand this glitch worked.
Because, you know, not everyone could PvP.
So, right. So it was only those few people. It was only the people that were scouring in the pool at the time that he expelled people. Those are the only people that had the PvP.
Okay. So, I mean, obviously, this was patched straight away with that. And when you think about it, that is a reason why I guess this kind of stuff doesn't happen in-game anymore. Because there was a post made immediately after the event, or rather the original massacre, by Paul Gower. And he said that, oh, we are, after this, totally revamping our code auditing and bug checking to make sure that nothing like this ever happens again. So, I mean, it was a big surprise to Jagex, and I don't know. I guess that's the million-dollar question is, was this known beforehand by anyone, or was it just a fluke? So,
right. We'll have to and, I don't mean to sit here and be Mr. Conspiracy Theorist or whatever, but I'm just kind of playing devil's advocate because I never really thought about that until now, until, you know, I sort of really put the pieces together on everything I've heard, and everything just kind of seems like a perfect storm for it to be like a incredible coincidence, but hey, stranger things have happened. But it's just kind of interesting to look at it from a different point of view and with everything how it played out. And as you said, I didn't know about the whole scrying pool thing, so that layer to that. Yeah. So it's just something to think about.
Well, and Duriel and his other buddies that were scouring at the pool at the time, this was such a big house party. I don't think they were like super close friends with Cursed You, but then again, you know, there's a reason to put on your tinfoil hat, because Jagex has to know something about Cursed You that we don't know, that I have not been able to find out, because I don't understand why someone would be permanently banned like that.
Yeah, exactly.
When they didn't do anything, you know, by what I've seen. So there, you know, maybe you're onto something, or maybe it was a fluke, you know. It's hard to tell. I don't know.
Yeah, it's almost kind of like a witness protection type thing.
Yeah,
if you can't find anything on Cursed You and he was instantly banned, it's almost like, you know, some of these assassinations and stuff, nobody really knows what happened and he kind of just disappeared and nobody talks about it. Notice that, you know, well, I guess they did mention Cursed You with the whole announcements in game, but yeah, that's very interesting because I haven't done too much digging in it, but like you said, you've definitely done your homework, you've done the research, and you really can't come up with much on Cursed You, so that definitely raises a little bit of a question for sure. So, anyway.
See, and then this brings it into the second point. This update comes out, and it's entirely focused on Duriel, because if you look at the news posting for this week's game update, there's a big, huge screenshot of this happening when they first brought it out into game. And, the entire area was full to the point where the update itself didn't actually work because it was overloaded and with too much lag. But basically, the event has two cycles. The first one is you become possessed by the ghost of Duriel 321 and PK other players, and I quote, players in the vicinity of the massacre area will randomly transmogrify into a ghostly Duriel 321, complete with the power to attack any nearby player and use his equipment loadout. Victims cannot fight back, but will not actually die or lose any items if killed by a possessed player. Players possessed by Duriel will receive double PvP XP from these kills too. Then the second one is the giant Duriel 321 boss fight. After several instances of possession, a giant Duriel 321 boss will appear. Join your fellow players in trying to take down this boss or help Duriel destroy your fellow players. Being killed by Duriel or other players during this phase of the event will also not cause you to lose items. You will receive double PvP XP from kills during this phase too. So, now, it's worth noting that a few days after this update hit, there is no possession, and there is no Giant Dural 3-2-1 boss fight because there simply are not enough people taking part in the event currently. And when there were enough people, unfortunately, even my gaming system lagged out and couldn't handle it, so I was not able to experience this. I assume you guys weren't able to as well.
I was not.
No.
So, now, going back to what we were saying about Dural 3-2-1 and using the equipment loadout of a player, it certainly seems as though that there's more that, I mean, we were initially led to believe rather than just, you know, some PvP rampage going on here. So, I don't know. Maybe there was something. Maybe there isn't. But overall, moving forward to 2016 now, dedicating a week's update to this, where do we stand? Let's start with you, Tanis.
All right, let me go here. Okay. First, just let me say this. I have a little theory of why this happened right now, other than just a 10th anniversary. Okay. Jagex is feeling like really nostalgic, right? Really nostalgic. They're walking around, they're patting each other on the back. Oh, it's 15 years. And that is a hell of an accomplishment. You know, props. You know, we've enjoyed this game for 15 years. But I think that really played a part, because this is something they don't talk about. They've never really talked about very much. I mean, as little as possible. All of a sudden, they have their 15th birthday, and it falls on the 10th anniversary of this. I think that was what really kind of pushed to do it. On top of that, they pulled a Jagex, okay? There was a way of doing this. That was tasteful. This was not it. I am all for the memorial in the Falador Garden. I think that would be that if you only did that, that would be an appropriate way to commemorate this. I know we don't want to put too much into this, you know, this bug, this glitch, you know, but I think it shook the foundation. And you can read more about this in my article this week. But I think it,
which you can find at informer.rsbnb.com.
Yes. Thank you, Shane. He's got my back. Okay. But it really kind of burnt something in the psyche of the community. You know, I mean, taking away that feeling of being safe somewhere, or being in a place where you should have been safe and then losing your party hat. I mean, that it just that's something that really sticks, right? So a memorial would have been fine. But they could have used with that memorial, they should have put a full court press on, this is why you don't bug abuse.
Yeah.
This is why you don't exploit this. These are the things that can happen. And they could have done so much with that. In using this as a teachable moment and a teaching tool and saying, this is what can happen. Don't be Dural 3-2-1. Because what they have done by making him the focus of this, well, I don't think he should have been a part of it at all. But making him the focus of this, you basically said, don't bug abuse. But if you do, make sure you're the biggest, baddest bug abuser that's ever lived, and we will make an NPC and immortalize you. What kind of a message is that?
Yeah, and I mean, if you look at the news post also for this week, the serious note, cheating and bug exploiting, gets two paragraphs. Not even two paragraphs.
Yeah, like not even.
Four sentences about this. And I mean, I see that there's two reasons for this. The first one is that obviously, like you said, we want to have some fun with this because it's 15 years and it's the year of looking back. It's time to, you know, put the players in control of the game, which we have effectively done with Rune Labs and the surveys and whatnot, power to the players, you name it. So let's just see what would we do if we were designing this game as players. And it's 15 years. That's number one I see. But the second thing I see about this is that we don't really care about, you know, cheating and bug exploiting, or maybe there's not so much bug exploiting that goes on these days that we can, you know, just have fun with this, right? So I think it's one of those two things, perhaps. Probably a combination of both, but when it comes down to it, we need to remember that the rules are the rules, and people ought to follow those, not only for the sake of following them and of, you know, doing what Jagex says, but for being good people, right?
Yes.
So,
yes.
I don't know. All right. Dave, what do you think?
I think it's pretty, we pretty much have a general consensus. I think it was rather distasteful. I think they focused on the wrong points. Again, they could have done a lot more, you know, subtly, but very effective, you know, having some sort of memorial, maybe even having some sort of like a mass graveyard event type thing, or, you know, where you're returning the items back to people that lost them. And they could, with how they've gotten so quest happy with these holiday events, I think it would have been really cool, you know, for like a little bit of a, maybe a scavenger hunter on Falador, and you're picking up like, you know, old party hats, and you know, you're returning them to each player's grave that, you know, had lost. That is something a little bit more respectful,
yeah,
somewhere along that line. But I mean, this is way off the charts, and I'm not trying to offend anyone, but whenever, you know, there's a big flub up or a big massacre or something like that, the last thing people do is try to recreate it. They usually remember it, but they pay their respects type of thing.
Yes.
You know, with all these terrorist attacks going on, oh, it's a 10-year anniversary, let's reenact it. No, you don't
right?
do that.
Right.
Granted, it's real life and video games, and you can make that argument, but still, it's
maybe,
you know,
100
you want...
years after the fact, like a Civil War reenactment, right?
Exactly. But that's just not really the tasteful thing to do in a negative event. I don't know. I think if it was distasteful, and they could have done a fun little quest. I'm not saying I would have done it. I'm saying it would have been a lot more appropriate, I guess you could say. But yeah, I mean, I can understand the gesture. They want to have some lighthearted fun. And I'm not offended by this. I just think it's, you know, they could have done better. And I don't know. I think they just overstepped the line of what's good, because I mean, people could get the wrong idea. You know, you don't want to immortalize something bad that happened,
right?
Because that's, you know, you can say, oh, don't do this. You know, that's like saying, don't try this at home. It's like, okay, well, you're doing it. So, I mean, you're still providing that chance that it's going to happen. But I feel like they were really glorifying bug abuse more than they were trying to prevent it. So like Tanis was saying, they could have done some sort of preventative measure, some sort of like stronghold of security type deal. But they chose to glorify it and kind of make a, kind of a zany little event, which doesn't really occur because no one is obviously interested enough or, you know, logged in to proc it. So anyway.
Yeah. And I mean, when you think about it, what exactly is this saying about the morals of the game if you're promoting a bug abuser, right? And
yeah.
I wouldn't even put in the Falador Massacre Memorial next week about this, right? Because...
Mm-hmm.
It happened. It's done. And I think that it involves such a small percentage of the population that, I mean, I don't know anyone who is affected by this.
No.
So.
I mean, I think you're definitely right about that. Like, I don't think it affected a lot of people. I mean, the people that it did affect, it affected them in a big way. I think it's more of that. It put a stamp in just. I mean, this is kind of a big thing that you do hear about, like the people talk about, and they're still talking.
Yeah,
about
I mean
it,
that's understandable,
know?
Right?
Right. I mean, I think you're right, you know, but it's something that has become a legend, you know. It's like, I don't know. It's like Bigfoot or something, you know. I mean,
this,
I don't know.
This actually happened.
Yeah, this actually happened.
So. I don't know. Personally, I agree with both of you. And as I said, I don't think that this memorial should have happened. This should have just been a patch note week, as, you know, we were initially led to believe. And because this actually wasn't posted with the news until it actually started happening in game. So this entire thing was a surprise because the update happened about an hour earlier. So.
Right.
But I did manage to dig up some information while you guys were chatting about the fate of Cursed You. Cursed You, of course, being the guy who got 99 construction. There's a interesting wiki out there called the RS Players Wiki, the RuneScape Players Wiki, that has profiles on pretty much everyone famous in RuneScape. So Cursed You was apparently had a huge cash stack because of staking. So, you know, back in the day you would stake and you would basically gamble money away by staking. So obviously that brought in a huge amount of GP for him in terms of items and actual cash. Now, he used that to get the first level 99 construction, which is where we're at. But you guys were asking about the ban. So when this happened, during the Validar Massacre, the Cursed You account was banned temporarily for 4 hours by JMod, but then it came back. And then a few months later, in August, Cursed You's account received a permanent ban for real-world trading, apparently. And this is, of course, coming from Cursed You himself, I believe, here. It says, this was due to Cursed You's real-life friend Josh, who was called Cursed You, spelled with a zero endgame. And he gained access to Cursed You's account after Cursed You agreed to let him use the account while he was at his sixth form final, which is basically meaning in New Zealand you're studying for your end of high school final exams. And then Josh, aka Cursed You with a zero, proceeded to walk around RuneScape asking players if they would like to purchase millions of in-game GP with real-world currency, eventually leading to Cursed You's ban for real-world trading.
Oh, okay.
Interesting. Okay.
So that is apparently what happened with Cursed You after this.
Okay.
Now, of course, this is coming from the RS Wiki, and let's see. Yeah, there is no actual link here to verify any of this data. So this is, of course, you know, could all be incredibly wrong here about what's going on. But nonetheless, that is and what was the fate of Cursed You. So Cursed You probably did have nothing to do with this, as you were expecting. And maybe Duriel321 was involved with this in terms of other people. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, I don't want to paint the entire PvP community with a brush, but I do remember the RS PvP community. Whenever they got the chance to PvP, they would do it in whatever form they could get it. So.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Opportunist. I think he was a total opportunist, you know.
Yeah.
Which is kind of where luring was born, so.
Yeah.
But
well, yeah.
Anyway.
And, I mean, I don't even know why this is still in game, like 4 days after the fact, because mm-hmm. there's not enough people there, and it's basically just, you know, one huge slogfest using the in-game dueling mechanics. Like, it doesn't make sense. Mm-mm. There's nothing relating to the Falador Massacre left because there's not enough people doing it, so it's just a, you know, big, huge, open Falador PvP. And for anyone who is observant and pays close attention, you'll see this is why last week they brought in the fun dueling update. So, I don't know. All right, last word to you guys. I'm finished with this, so.
I think we pretty much covered it.
All right. Tanis, anything else?
No. This is... that's what I wanted to... what I wanted to say.
Yeah, probably gave it far too much time, but... All right, moving into the patch notes for this week. So, some little changes with the dueling system brought in last week, and of course used in this week's Falador Massacre reenactment. Special attack energy is now restored to its previous amount when a duel ends. Adrenaline is now drained at the end of a duel. So, there's two things relating to that, because you would keep adrenaline previously, and special attack energy would not go up if you were using legacy mode. So you have that. A couple of invention tweaks here and there. Tech tree tasks are now only blocked for the player when all tech trees are fully unlocked. YouTube being completionists, I assume you've done this, yeah?
I have not yet. I have not gotten all the way, but it's interesting that they did this.
Yeah. How about you, Tanis?
I've been doing the little like jobs, but I actually haven't cashed in my points for the
for the tree
item. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. You know, Sirion and I, He's the fine fellow who we had do the Summer Summit coverage with. We were chatting about this week, and we were saying, why lock this off after you've completed both trees? Like, it doesn't make sense to do that, because it is a unique mechanic, I think, of invention that could and should be brought into other skills, as we heard on the Summer Summit. So why block this off? Instead, give people an amount of XP similar to a small or medium-sized invention lamp by completing these tasks. So complete a task, get whatever, you know, a small invention lamp would give you in terms of XP. I don't see anything wrong with that. And it would encourage people to, you know, just make things and use up their components with invention. So that's just a bit of a side offshoot about how we could improve invention and, I guess, bring it out to more people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you on that.
The Dwarven Sprinkler will no longer water crops so thoroughly that they disintegrate or mutate.
Interesting.
Yeah, now obviously Jagex putting on their own spin on this, disintegrate or mutate means that they would previously get graphically distorted and not look right if they had the sprinkler on them for too long. So it's always fun to see that. Back to the duels, added more safety checks so that when a player dies in a duel, to ensure that they die a safe death. Of course, we want that for this week. And every other week that people are using this dueling system. In Kindred Spirits, both Meg and Major Mary Rancor have been trained to remain still after the excitement of Redacted. Now, I'm trying to figure out what the excitement of this could be. I'm thinking it might have been near the end of the quest when Linza was made a white, but I'm not 100% sure on that. Hmm. Saki McGee from the Mega May task set can now be keepsaked for anyone who uses that. And fixed a Linux window resize issue with the NXT client, and slightly raised the height of items that are dropped on the ground in NXT. So that are your patch notes for this week, unless you guys have any other major ones that you guys would like to discuss here.
Nothing stood out to me.
Yeah, it was a fairly slim patch week this week, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Being an off-update week. So, alrighty then. Following from that, an interesting and perhaps shocking announcement relating to RuneFest and Bonds. As we all know, no date has been added yet for when RuneFest 2016 will be happening, but basically, there's going to be no Bonds dealing with RuneFest this year. You won't be able to purchase tickets with Bonds, you won't be able to purchase rooms with Bonds, and you won't be able to purchase flights with Bonds either. So this is a bit of a shock to everyone who was saving up for that. And there's a whole FAQ established with this about why they might be doing that. So basically it says here, after a long period of investigation and some in-depth analysis, we've reached the conclusion that we're unable to offer the purchases of tickets, hotels, or flights using Bonds this year. This isn't a decision we've taken lightly or through a simple matter of choice. There's a whole host of complicated reasons that have come into play. They have done their best to find solutions, but there just is no workable alternative to make this happen. So I guess I can see the bond market perhaps shrinking a bit based on this, but you guys have any thoughts on this?
I mean, that's the only thing that stands out to me. I just find it odd that it's kind of like, yeah, that's not going to work because reasons. Like, okay. A little bit more, like, I guess I can understand that they really don't want to disclose some of that information, but if they're not really willing to disclose that, it's kind of odd. I guess the bond market is going down, but they don't really want to come out and say that, because then it, you know, makes it sound like they're doing bad, you know, whatever. So I get that, but it's just kind of odd, and that's kind of a big hit, because I feel like a lot of people actually fund their trip to RuneFest that
way. Oh, yeah. So I know people have been working this entire year just to save up for that. So it is certainly a big hit to them indeed. But, I mean, I do have a theory on this, and it comes down to the principle of having cash on hand or liquid assets, as it's called in the accounting world. And the idea is that a bond could have been bought today with real-world cash, or it could have been bought 6 months ago or a year ago with real-world cash and just sitting in someone's bank in RuneScape, right? So basically what this does, I think, is it allows RuneFest to actually generate revenue and not necessarily move bonds into, say, tickets, so to speak, but it just allows Jagex to have the money for RuneFest in quarter two of 2016 compared to have been having it received, you know, sometime in 2015 or maybe 2014, for example. So I think that could be one reason behind it. Another reason, I think, is that it is hard for a company to purchase flights on behalf of someone, let alone flights from somewhere across the world. It's also hard for a company to purchase rooms en masse for people and have them at a discounted rate. So I think that those are probably the two big reasons that it comes down to a matter of logistics for Jagex and the fact that it involves pulling in more actual cash for Jagex. Now, they say RuneFest is not run to make a profit, and we fully expect the event to cost us more as a result of this change. So I'm not saying that this isn't true. I'm just merely saying that by doing this, yes, Jagex will still not make a profit on it, but they will bring more income in the coming quarter than had they, you know, just allowed the bonds to go ahead. Mm-hmm. If you guys get where I'm going with that.
Right.
And the main reason I jumped to that conclusion is because in the news posting for the Chinese deal, which we haven't heard anything more about, it said that the core operating profits of Jagex were only around $350,000 last year. So a company that is operating with that amount of profit definitely wants to have as much cash on hand as possible. Hence, that is what requiring all RuneFest tickets to be bought with cash, or, you know, otherwise known as just money, will help at the end of the day, even if they don't make a profit off it.
Right.
So it all comes down to having cash on hand and the liquid assets. So, but that's that. And they also say we'll be sharing more details with you once everything is locked down, but just to tease, it may be an idea to pack your seafaring gear and beachwear. So what does that mean? Is that going to mean that they're going to be having a beach-themed RuneFest in the middle of October in the UK?
I doubt it. It's probably something to do with the summer event and
there
the
might
court
be
reports and stuff. But
I guess seafaring would certainly mean focus on the eastern lands, right?
The arc, yeah.
That's what I was thinking.
Okay. So, anyways, for those of you guys wondering why, that's my not-so-humble theory. But, all right. Moving on then, Treasure Hunter. This week, we are seeing a replay of the Elite Skilling outfits. So those of you guys who wanted your shark outfit, now's the time. Because on the 9th of June, you can get the Gemstone Golem. On the 10th of June, it's the Rune Ethereal outfit. And on the 11th, it is the shark outfit. And then on the 12th is the Divine Simulacrum outfit. And then on the 13th, you can have a chance at receiving all the outfits. So if you are looking for one of these, probably a decent time to do those extra daily challenges. Use the Hearts of Ice and lock categories to see if you can help yourself get some of these outfit pieces. So I think it's nice that they're replaying these, especially some of the overpowered ones like the shark outfit.
Yeah.
So we'll hope for a thieving one at some point in the future as well. Oh, you find that funny?
Oh, no, because I know it's going to happen.
Oh, okay, fair enough. Any of these you guys are going for specifically?
No, I don't really need them. I already had the shark outfit, and to me that was the biggest one. That was the biggest game changer because it pretty much determined the entire end game Way to Train a Skill, but that was a previous episode. So
yeah, that's right. And I mean, some of these pictures, it's interesting to see a shark in this form. So anyways, that's it for RS stuff this week, unless you guys have anything else that you'd like to mention.
I think that gets it.
That covers it.
All right. Well, on to questions we go then. We got a good number of them this week, so I will start off reading the one from Trekkie. So he says, yes, the Falador Massacre. I remember that day very well. It seems Shane Jagex is trying to spin this into a positive light. It should be a solemn reminder of what terrible deeds can do given the chance. Aha, someone else who agrees with us. If we were to remember the Falador Massacre, how would you go about it without making it sound like a holiday for everyone to go around and murder each other? So we touched on this a bit, but let's expand on those ideas. And I know, I think we said some kind of item recovery in Falador, Dave.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was going for. And honestly, like, some could argue that's going a little far, making it like an event in general. I think it also would have been very effective, like Tana's touched on as well, just having, you know, a memorial, a statue or something similar to like how we had the rune pile in Falador. You know, it's just something there, something that could be functionality, maybe a function as a summoning obelisk, you know, what have you, have a little bit of usefulness so people, it's not just like tucked away in a corner of dead content, but some sort of, I don't know. It could have been done a lot better, and it honestly could have been done effectively without, you know, requiring an entire news post about it, and you know, this much development effort. It's just it could have been more subtle, tasteful, but that's kind of where we're all at with
it. I think the news post just descends from the point that that players want an update every week. Otherwise, they get salty about that, right?
Sure.
So, because, I mean, I could see this being mentioned in one final paragraph, like you just said, which would have been fine. But, Dennis, what would you do instead?
I probably would have done... I would have done the memorial, but the focus would have been on, you know, not exploiting bugs. I would have put a lot more focus in that. Like I would have had the etching of the memorial, you know, would have actually focused on that on this day, because of the selfishness of a few individuals exploiting this bug, many people lost a lot of valuable items, you know. I mean, yeah. I just would have hammered that home.
And we got to also remember that this was 2006, and it was not, you know, the time when you could just find rune plate bodies or, you know, dragon weapons everywhere. It was when dragon weapons were expensive and rare. Dragon chain bodies were rare. Actually, I don't even know if they were out yet, but maybe. I don't know. But that kind of thing, it would have been a good thing to hammer home, so... as for me, I wouldn't have done the memorial. And I mean, if anything, what you could have done is you could have just had, say, for example, a ghost of Duriel 321, if you wanted to bring him into game, and then have that ghost, you know, give a lecture on rule breaking and bug handling. And then maybe, I think an interesting thing that they could have brought into the wider game was an actual bug squashing event. Because if you click the report a bug window in game, and you leave it up for enough time, you'll get bugs crawling across it. And then if you click on those bugs, you can actually make them splat. I don't know if you guys have ever done that.
No, I didn't know that.
I actually did not know that.
Yeah, it shows how much time I spend in the bug reporting window, right? But, so I would have done something like that, have Duriel do that, and then maybe have like a Falador party room-esque kind of thing, except in the Falador Center, where... after you talk to him, or maybe even every 5 to 10 minutes, there's a certain type of bug that comes crawling out of around him and where this ghost is. And then those bugs are, say, wearing, you know, the party hats or the weapons or the GP that were lost. And you can squash them, get tokens, and then maybe get a little cosmetic something or other that commemorates 10 years of construction instead.
There you go.
Hey, yeah.
And still no construction.
Not bad.
But hey, I'm still salty. Oh boy.
Yeah. So hopefully that's a way we can make it better. So, yeah. All right, Dave, you take the next one from Tyler.
All right. Hi, all. So there's this great new game out called Overwatch, which I know Shane et al. I've mentioned before on the show. Oh, okay, you've mentioned on the show before. But I just wanted to know from each of you, if you've played the game, who's your favorite hero to play as? And if you were stuck playing only one hero or only one class of heroes, which would it be? If you haven't played the game, all caps, what are you waiting for? And based on anything you know of the game or based on the poster from the game, who do you immediately like the most in terms of design, etc.? Keep up the good work.
All right. So, of course, Dave and I have tried Overwatch.
Mm-hmm.
So, Tannis, have you given it a try?
I have not.
All right. Well, the best way of thinking about it is you take the TF2 class system and then you combine it with the graphics of, say, Borderlands or something. So less cartoony than TF2. And then tack the most polished FPS game you can think of on top of it, and then you have Overwatch. So that is how Overwatch can be sold to people. So I would highly recommend you give it a try, Tannis, if okay, you're ever yeah, looking at a game good. To purchase in the future. $40 on Blizzard service, so it's not free,
not bad.
But it lots of gameplay in it. So hero-wise... Yeah, let's start with you, Dave. Who do you play the most, or would you play the most?
You know, I'm split between Pharah and McCree. And no, not McCree, because he's super overpowered. Honestly, during the beta when I was in it, that's just kind of who I gravitated towards. I like the
Damage. Clint Eastwood?
Yeah, I like the damage dealer, so that kind of answers that question. I enjoy, you know, going on the offensive and just, you know, taking people down. My second favorite is probably the defenders. I do enjoy Roadhog quite a bit, but I mean, I would say those are my top three. If I had to pick one, gosh, probably McCree, because it does take, like, I don't know, it's a lot of the heroes have the big splash damage and the rockets and stuff like that, and I just kind of like the, you know, regardless of how powerful the actual, you know, shot is, I kind of enjoy the just the very small sight but having the long range without it, you know, having to look down a sight like Widowmaker. Mm-hmm. I enjoy the long range weapons without the visual constraints of looking down a scope and having reduced speed. So it's definitely kind of a, you know, it's really just about, you know, your sweeping headshots and stuff like that and getting the hits off and being able to maneuver like that. So I really enjoy that really in any game I play. You know, Destiny, I prefer the scout rifles and whatnot, but that's a whole nother monster. So yeah, I'd probably say McCree, just for the fact of how he plays, you know, has the grenades and the tumbles and stuff like that. So that's pretty standard in terms of, FPS characters that I tend to gravitate towards. And when he gets nerfed, I'll still probably play him just because I like it. I'm not one of the people to, you know, play the flavor of the week and whoever gets buffed.
Yeah,
and just play that.
I totally agree with you on that.
So anyway, yeah, that's probably my favorite. And, you know, like I said, I enjoy the damage dealing. And, you know, most importantly, regardless of what class you are, and this is just a little bit of advice to anybody that does play, go for objectives, especially when it's an objective match. You know, before everybody loads into a lobby, they'll have like a skirmish going on where it's just kind of like haywire and there's, you know, no real score being kept. But, you know, I speak for all of your teammates when I say go for objectives, because that wins and loses games. You know, it's not Call of Duty. And I feel like way too many people come into this game thinking it's like Call of Duty. Oh, let me just see how many people I can kill. I'm just going to run out and die and do this.
And they make good fun of Call of Duty too with Soldier 76, because it's got the sprint, it's got the nuke tube grenades, and you just basically fire and spray everywhere.
Right. So, I mean, yeah, go for objectives. Like, you know, it may not be the most exciting thing to sit around your point, and I know camping is discouraged pretty much in Call of Duty, and that's really a habit you need to break, because you do need to go for objectives. You shouldn't just go for kills. Yes, kills are nice, but strategic kills are where you know, it's going to be the line between victory and just getting absolutely smashed. Because if you just keep going out trying to get kills, they're going to lure you out, kill you. You know, you're going to have like a 20-second respawn timer, and then they're just going to come in, capture the point, and then you lose. And then you get frustrated, and then you don't want to play anymore. So I speak for most people that play it semi-regularly. Go for the objectives no matter what class you play. And in all honesty, I would strongly discourage having a favorite character and having a favorite class. This is definitely a game of adaptability. And that was really hammered home and made apparent whenever you're able to, or they made it so you could basically switch classes and characters as soon as you die. Most of these arena games, you pick your character, like League of Legends. Granted, it's a different genre, but you sort of lock in your, you know, your meta. You lock in your role, and that's pretty much how it is till the end. This is very flexible. So if, you know, if they're running big time tanks, then you can get big time damage, big time snipers, and countered. It's a constant counter strategic game. It's not just a, you know, balls to the wall deathmatch and just light them up. It's definitely a little bit more more in depth. So that's kind of my little soapbox, I guess. But
anyway. That's good. That's good. And I assume you like McCree because it means you always get to sit down for lunch at high noon, right?
That's right. Look at the time.
Yeah, every 5 minutes it's high noon. Time for that's lunch. Right. Well, as for me, I can play Mei and I'm good as Mei, but there's extenuating reasons why I prefer not to play that character. Tyler knows why. And with that, other characters that I can focus on and I think I'm good at are Pharah and McCree. Also enjoy the Reaper. So I would have to say mainly the offensive characters with a bit of Mei thrown in. Not too much for the support or defensive kind of roles. I mean, anyone can play Bastion if they want to, you know, play Bastion and defend something statically. So that's always positive there, too. But yeah, pretty much offense for me. So... but yeah, great game, and it was pick of the week a couple weeks ago, so definitely give it a look. And lastly, based on the photo here, Tanis, in the notes, which of these characters do you like the most? And I mean, it's obviously kind of hard to tell here based on just the photo, but I don't know. I guess aesthetically, which one do you prefer? I mean, we have Muhammad Gandhi on the far right, which is his in-game name is Zenyatta. See, that's something else. All the characters we play have nicknames associated with them, like McCree is Clint Eastwood, for example. Mm-hmm. And Clint Eastwood is, of course, the one with the big revolver and the Western-style hat. So, and then Pharah is the rocket launcher at the top right between the E and the R. So, what do you think, Tanis?
A lot of characters here.
I know, right?
Wow, yeah, this looks pretty cool. Is it cliche to like Clint Eastwood? Because he looks pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a good character. So, yeah.
I guess, like, which one is really good at dying repeatedly? That would be
Tracer,
mine
probably.
Yeah, okay. Tracer. If you're not a good fast player, because very weak in terms of armor and health, but best speed. So Tracer is right to the left of McCree, and then okay. You have
orange
the soul.
And yellow pants.
Yeah, orange and yellow, and I mean it looks male, but I guess it's female.
Yeah.
So
it's kind of hard to tell. It's a small picture.
Yeah, it is. So that's that. And then you have the main healer of the game in this photo, Mercy, at the underneath the H. So you can pretty much play anything you want. And, of course, the bigger ones are the tanks. So, yeah. All right. Well, thank you for that question, Tyler. Our next one comes from Wiley. Are there any bosses or mini-bosses that you legitimately enjoy fighting? I personally love the Chaos Elemental because having an inventory full of cabbages is actually useful for dealing with one of its boss mechanics. From Wiley. All right, so it's been hit home that Dave and I don't boss, so Tanis, do you go bossing at all?
Yeah. Yeah, I try to do my Reapers as often as possible. I mean, I've been kind of stuck doing invention fishing for quite a while while I've been trying to bone up on my Chronicle skills, but I normally will try to at least do my Reaper every day.
All right. So which ones do you really enjoy?
Okay, I'm not a weirdo, but I do actually really like Corp.
Okay.
Let me just say I liked it. I was going for the pet, right? And I liked it a lot more before it dropped the pet and gave it to my friend and not me.
That when you disconnected or something like that?
Nah, he just out DPS'd me or whatever. I mean, that's just how it goes. It was fine. Okay. But he doesn't care about pets. Like, he doesn't like pets.
So it's almost wasted on him, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, if it don't make money, it don't make sense to him, you know? So it's like, but I still love Corp. I still have a special place for that. And then I'm also going to say, I might break some hearts with this one too, but Hellware. I really like
that's a new one.
Yeah.
I think normally people like the Twin Furies there, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, they do. And, you know, I mean, I do the Furies. I mean, all the bosses are good. Like, I like them all. But I really like Hellware and Vindictus. Those are my two favorite.
All right. So those are some that people might not necessarily like, but you like then.
Yeah.
That's a nice change of pace.
Yeah, that's good. As for me, the only boss that I can do reliably, competently is the Queen Black Dragon. I think my best was I had like a minute 55 kill there or something. I got lucky on a threshold, and it was weak to melee at that point, so that worked really well for that. So yeah, all I do is Queen Black Dragon. It's one that I enjoy. It's just it takes me so long to gear up and then go, and then if you're going to bring a yak, you got to commit for a full hour, that kind of thing. So,
right.
But anyways, Dave, you have any that you legitimately enjoy fighting?
You know, I've got a couple, and I mean, everybody can argue that they're not really bosses anymore, which is probably why I like them. I really enjoy Barrows, just classic Barrows. I always kind of have combination of it's a lot more laid back than most of the other encounters, and then partial to the fact that it holds a lot of nostalgic value to me because I've been doing Barrows since I was able to back in 2006, 2007, you know, back when those drops were heavily coveted and,
right,
you know, very expensive. And it was actually something you had to bank every two or three trips, you know, get more prayer potions and, you know, all that stuff. And it was definitely not as casual as it is now. But looking back on it, you know, I sort of miss that. And it's, you know, it hasn't really changed that much over the years, which is good. It has, like, graphically, but in terms of mechanics and stuff, they haven't completely just redone it and re-overhauled it and stuff like that. We have the Rise of the Six. I stay away from that because that's way too up there for me in terms of PVM. But yeah, I enjoy Barrows, and I don't mind Bandos, God Wars. I mean, that's pretty face roll. I mean, it's pretty much the weakest boss there. I actually spent a couple weeks there doing invention, so it got to be pretty much muscle memory. But I mean, it's, you know, people can say it's a tank and spank, but it really was something where it was one of the first times that I was really conscious.
Yeah,
of,
it kind of paved the way both in personal experience and game experience for bossing, I think.
Right. And it was kind of the first time that I really paid attention to EOC abilities and what they can do, because I think the ability's name is Slaughter. I don't know. It's whatever the ability is where you you use the ability, and then if your target moves within like 3 seconds or whatever, it takes like 300% damage or three times the amount of damage over time or something.
Okay, that's a good one to use.
And that really made the difference between a 1 minute fight and a 30 second fight. And it was crazy to me that there was such a big gap in just like the just the ability use and just the timing with that. And it was kind of cool to me. I mean, not enough for me to, you know, start going to Virago and, you know, Araxor and stuff like that. But it was just, it was really, it was interesting that, you know, there really is more, to the combat side of the game, than just, you know, point click and just sit there and wait. Cause I've always been a Revolution guy. You know, I was Momentum before that came out and, never really sort of delved into EOC, in terms of, you know, being most efficient and, you know, the most DPS and whatnot. So I would say those are my two. They're fairly entry level, but that's what I like about them. They're pretty laid back. You can still get the lucrative loot, but you don't have to sit there, you know, sweaty palms and worrying about dying and stuff like that. So anyway.
Yeah, and I mean, if you're wanting to go Araxor or Virago level, that's a whole different level of commitment, I think. Well, maybe not Araxor, but definitely Virago and sure. Raids, and there's a whole different set of dynamics around that, which we can talk about at some other point. All right, well, there's our favorite bosses, and the last question comes from Whitey. So, hey guys, I feel like Prestige Mode isn't needed because of the virtual leveling system. This system provides enough motivation for most people to carry on past 99. There is also 120 capes in the games to show this off. So my question is, can you sell Prestige Mode to me in a few sentences? On a lighter note, after you mentioned Pokemon last week, it made me think, what's your favorite Pokemon? Mine is Blaziken. Thanks from Whitey. Alright, well, Prestige Mode in a few sentences. So, first off, yes, the 120 leveling system with virtual levels is good to a point, but after you get to 120, and, you know, if you're going to 120 in a skill that's not Dungeoneering or Invention, there's no milestones along the way to mark that, and to me, that's a fundamental part of training a skill in RuneScape. So the idea is that, yes, once you get level 99 or 120, you can reset. And as we kind of came to consensus on with Prestige Mode, you would get some kind of benefit. And that benefit, you know, might be a slight enhancement to the skill or something cosmetic. And then you would basically reset, and then you would start off training from the very beginning again, and you would have three net benefits to this. The first one is, as I mentioned, if you were going 99 to 120 in a skill, that's not an elite skill or Dungeoneering, you don't have any markers to do that. Whereas if you Prestige, you get all the markers you had going from level 1 to 99 the first time unlocking things. That's benefit number one. Benefit number two is that there is a lot of content in-game that players like us, and I'm not sure what your overall levels are, that you might have missed because, well, it was a mid-level update, and it came out after you had level 99 cooking, for example, so you didn't really go and play it. So it provides a way for you to look at training the skill in different ways that might not have been around when you first trained it. And the third reason is it creates an infinite, well, almost infinite level of replayability for skills in games, which, I mean, is really a great thing, because if you think about it, if there's a skill you really like and you want to keep training it past 200 million XP right now, you can't do that, but you could with Prestige Mode. And this is also good with Jagex, because if they have a huge contingent of players who like, say, oh, I don't know, let's just say Crafting and Slayer, for example, well, they can reset and keep training it, which is great for Jagex because it keeps people in the game and keeps them interested working on things that they like. So absolutely. I think it's a net benefit to you, and it's also a benefit to Jagex. So there you go.
Sold. There's a few more than a couple sentences, but I think it's pretty much at home.
I mean, it was short enough that we didn't spend 20 minutes belaboring the point, but it gets the point home, is that if you're using virtual levels, there's no milestones aside from a level up thing, and there's no unlocks. Mm-hmm. And goal setting and unlocks has to be what an MMO is about, unless you're just out there for the GP hunt or the item hunt or something like that.
Exactly.
So I think that's why Prestige is important, and it lets people who really like their skills get 200 million, reset it, and do it again. Yep. Because you don't get XP and a skill once you've got 200 mil, which is just right. saddening for some people. And to those people who say, well, I got my spot on the high scores. Well, sure you did. And in the system I designed, there will be a legacy high score table, and you'll keep that position. But if you want to keep getting ranks, you got it once before, you can keep doing that. So
absolutely.
No reason to be lazy. But anyways, that's Prestige Mode in a nutshell. Thank you for the question on it. Favorite Pokemon, Dave?
Favorite Pokemon is going to be probably Sharpedo. Sharpedo or Gengar. I feel like Gengar is kind of cliche for most people. I don't know why, but I know I like him. But those are my two. I would probably say Sharpedo overall.
When did Sharpedo come in?
That was Gen 3. That was Ruby, I believe.
And what number is that?
I'm not that good.
Okay.
It's funny because I actually have a friend. He knows, I think, the first three or four gens. You just name a number and he'll rattle off the name within 2 seconds. It's actually kind of ridiculous. Oh, it's almost savant status. It's pretty funny. We tease him about it all the time. But yeah, actually, let me I can find out for you real quick.
Wow, I only know the first 150, so yeah.
Well, hey, if I said 37, can you tell me what Pokemon that is?
No.
Okay.
No, I can't. What is 37?
I don't know. Sharpedo is 319.
Oh, I thought you knew what number 37 was, but okay. Well, I mean,
it's Vulpix. Okay, anyway. Just look it up.
My favorites were the psychic ones, pretty much anything in the psychic class. And I would always, you know, top it off with something water. And it was basically a game of counters for me. And mm-hmm. I think I went with the psychic ones because they had the least things that could be resisted against. So,
what about Ghost? I feel like they were pretty immune to most things.
Yes, Ghost
other than
as
Ghost.
Well. It was a combination of Ghost, Psychic, and then I think two others would get thrown in there. But yeah. That was ages ago. So
yeah, I always like Fire and Dark. Those are my two.
Okay. How about you, Tanis?
So I never did the Pokemon thing.
Yeah, that's fine. I know people who didn't.
Right. There's not too many of us. I just think it. I think I was a little bit older by the time it started getting big, and I never caught on.
Yeah, yeah. Apparently they're up to Generation 7 now?
Yeah, something like that. It's kind of crazy.
And they're still making new ones.
It's the funny joke is, you know, in first gen, you know, the beginning of the game, it's like, you know, over aeons and aeons, we finally, you know, discovered... you know, it took us aeons to discover 150 and all this stuff, and then, you know, within 10 years, we have, like, 800 more. Just kind of funny. It's a little plot hole, but that's kind of the joke. It's like, oh, it's taken us so long to scour up and discover these 150 Pokemon. You know, it's been a lifetime of research. And then, like, oh, 3 years later, here's 300 more we just came across.
Yeah.
Just kind of funny.
That's right.
Any hardcore Pokemon enthusiast will definitely make that reference because it's just a little minor plot hole.
Yeah.
But, hey,
Alakazam, Psyduck, Hypno.
There you go.
Gengar, and then there might have been a Charizard thrown in there and some water one. I don't know, but something like that is what it consisted of. And this was Pokemon Stadium on the N64 that I found really groundbreaking at the time. I don't know if they've ever done anything like that before or again.
Yeah, they've actually made a few sequels to that. I actually... had one on the GameCube. I didn't own it. I either borrowed it from a friend or I rented it. It was like Pokemon Coliseum or something. It was, I think, up to Gen 3, but it was sort of the same concept. But there was more of a story, which is kind of cool. It wasn't just really pick your stuff in battle and like a ladder style. It was more of a kind of go out in the world, almost like a 3D version of the Game
right.
Boy games. And that was kind of cool. But, I mean, that was... way long ago. That was before I played, really before I got into RS, so my memory's a little fuzzy with that, but I do remember it being sort of an open world Pokemon Stadium type thing, and that was also groundbreaking for the time, but that was like 2002 or 2003, so I remember that.
Yeah, I think that's something that they could do that would bring me back for a bit would probably be a MMO type game, or maybe some kind of Pokemon MOBA, perhaps done modernly. That might be interesting in a way.
Yeah,
that might be a bit too big.
I've said for the past couple of years what they could really do to even just help Nintendo as a whole is bring out a fee version of the game, just like the Game Boy games and the DS games.
The original
games.
Ones, yeah.
Right. Have it be a 3D version. Have it be on the Wii U so they can promote that system, be exclusive, and have it have all of – all 750 or however, all generations in one thing. You can go to each continent like an MMO. It would really sort of be like a Pokemon MMO. And I feel like, I mean, I would literally go out and buy a Wii U just to play that game. And I think that would be super smart on their part. Now, that doesn't say that they're able to do that with all the licensing and whatnot. But I just think, you know, sort of theory crafting again, that would be very, very good idea on their part, because I know so many people that have mentioned that and said they would want something like that, and they would play something like that, and they would buy an entire system just for that game. And I think that would be really cool for them to do that, like you said, sort of an MMO battle, you know, giving to the competitive scene.
And you
really
know, Nintendo needs something like that, because I don't even think they're making games anymore for the Wii U.
Right.
So,
I mean, that would be something very, very smart on their part to be a pseudo release title for the NX when we find out more about that.
Yeah.
I don't know. All I'm saying is,
of course, there might be a whole Pokemon community out there laughing at us for this,
right? But I think it goes without saying that a lot of people want that sort of modernized thing. They want something that you don't have to, you know, something that's, dare I say, dumbed down to handheld mechanics, or you know what have you.
Yeah, and if you're gonna make a handheld today, just put it on the smartphones.
Exactly.
So.
And I think they almost tried to do that, or Nintendo was trying to get into the mobile environment, and I think that just kind of went away because, let's be honest, the mobile market is really sort of focused on the Candy Crush genre. Just the quick puzzle games, quick accessibility, you know, not too much investment because, you know, we all have our phones for other reasons as well. At least the majority of the population doesn't have a phone for the games. It's usually for the,
right.
for the email or the connectivity, so they're not going to sit there and, you know, play a Pokemon game and drain their battery when they're going to have to call for a ride, you know, in a couple hours.
That's
or
true.
What have you. So, anyway.
Apparently they have time travel Pokemon now.
Oh, yeah. It's getting kind of out of control. I really stopped playing religiously after, like, third gen. Like, after Ruby and Sapphire, I kind of just put it down because it got really, really convoluted, and I think a lot of people feel the same. But...
Yeah. All
anyway.
Right. I can see why Tannis would not be getting into this now.
It's
so
kind of a commitment, honestly,
of,
when you sit down and think about it, yeah.
Yeah. Holy cow. Let's see what this goes up to. 721 so far at the end of Generation 6. And, I mean, how do they keep coming up with these names? I mean, like Hoopa.
You can tell they're kind of running out of ideas.
Phantom. Trevenant. Pump Kaboo.
Yeah, it's getting kind of laughable, actually. Everybody's making jokes, you know. I don't know what gen it was 4 or 5. They had like an ice cream cone Pokemon. It was like the first stage was just a single scoop, the second stage was 2 scoops, and the third stage was 3 scoops. And it's like, are you guys really that low on ideas? You're starting to pull a Jagex here. I'm sorry.
Whoa. All right. Well.
But that was just because – and then there was one. It was like a – there was a cog, and then there was 2 cogs, and then there was 3 cogs. It's like, wow. The development team definitely got a raise off of that one. It's just like, oh, my gosh. It's funny. It's all in fun. And, you know, people have to realize this game is really sort of focused towards, you know, like the you know, 12-year-old community.
Is it,
all
though?
Taking aside. But here's the thing. They're trying to keep the original players in our demographic,
yeah.
you know, in their, yeah. their 20s.
Because I see Pokemon streaming on Twitch.
Oh, sure. And honestly, it really is a more mature community now, as same as RS. Everybody's, you know, pegged RS as being, oh, you're a 12-year-old game. Same with Pokemon. But all things being aside, it hasn't really pulled in too much new, not much of a new market. It's kind of just stay with it. So majority of RuneScape players are 20s, 30s. Majority of Pokemon players are now 20s and 30s. And I think they're trying a little bit too hard to sort of bring in the younger demographic when I feel like the younger demographic is more
attention deficit disordered.
Right. And they're being, you know, targeted by the mobile games, you know, the Candy Crush and stuff, because, you know, we go out, you go out in public and usually the kids now are entertained not with coloring books or whatnot, but they have like the family iPad and they're playing Angry Birds and stuff like that. And it's just fostering that whole pseudo gaming. And it's, you know, it's a whole nother discussion and I won't get into it, but
yeah,
it is,
we don't have time for that, but yeah, you know, I feel based on that sigh. All righty.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for the questions, everyone. If you want to send them in, you can email us at questions@rsbnb.com or call or text to 571-57-BNB. That's 571-572-2632. Or if you use the Twitters, you can DM us at RSBNB and we'll fit question into the show. And note, we do like audio questions, so you can send audio questions to the email address or to the phone number by leaving us a voice message.
Indeed.
All right. Well, moving on to tech news. There has been a supposed hack of Twitter. 32 million Twitter accounts have supposedly been compromised through a major leak. And this includes login credentials that people use to log into the website. Twitter does say that their systems have not been breached, which is, of course, always a good thing to hear in situations like this. And the whole, locus of this breach comes from people installing corrupted browser extensions that are stealing your passwords as you enter them in to Twitter. And the majority of them come from Russia and the rest of Eastern Europe. So that's where the majority of these user accounts are located. But of course, with that being a global company, there are some in North America. And the fact is that they were installed based on compromised browser extensions. So 32.8 million accounts. This includes email addresses, usernames, and passwords. And Twitter has been verifying, cross-checking these lists, seeing if the data is in fact true and they are current. So, yeah, they're hit by infected malware on Chrome and Firefox. So I guess this is the point of the show, which I reiterate the common adage with security, that you do not install something unless you absolutely know what it is and you went looking for it. Do not install a browser extension just because a page says you need it. Install that extension because you know you need it based on, you know, going to the Chrome extension store, for example, or the Mozilla extension repository to find their extensions. That is the way that we need to look at our browsers when we install extensions. So the message I have for everyone listening to the show is that suppose you're browsing on a website and it says you need to install this extension to continue. Well, you likely don't, and you're likely on your way to being hacked. So if that's the case, just look up that website on Google, see if it needs any additional extensions. It likely doesn't. And if they do, they can most often be found in the Chrome or Firefox extension store, which is the safest way to get extensions. So don't go installing stuff in your browser that you don't need or comes from a shady source.
Exactly. And moreover, don't put your password in anything other than the certified extension for that service via that company.
Yeah. But I mean, some of these extensions can see what you're typing into form fields on the page, so I can see how some people might have got bit if they installed them and then went to Twitter, for example. Mm-hmm. But still, it's a good warning to not put your password into things that you don't know. So
absolutely.
This is more of a PSA than that there being a problem with Twitter or anything like that. So just use a password manager and be safe online, everyone. That's what we got to say about this one.
Yep.
Tanis, you got anything on this one?
Nope. I completely
agree.
It's
common sense, really.
And, you know, yeah, I mean, I guess it could have been worse. You know, they hacked Twitter, so at least if they're going to do something, it has to be 140 characters or less, right?
And especially Twitter. And, you know, I don't want to go off on a tangent on this too far, but Twitter is a huge market for spam advertising and, you know, hijacked accounts and whatnot. You know, on my timeline at any given point, there's just these stupid retweets and just completely bogus articles and just all kinds of crazy stuff because these people try to, you know, put in their password and stuff for these unfollow bots and all this stuff. And it's just, it really is. I can't feel bad because these people do it to themselves. You know, it's, you go to a shady website and it says, oh, my clean PC, get your free scan now, download this executable file, like use some common sense, people. But unfortunately, not all people know that. But hopefully now that you're listening to this, you know, not to, don't install something unless it's verified. So anyway.
Indeed. Just be careful and don't install stuff, especially on Windows if you don't know where it came from or you need it.
Right.
All right. Our next one is a series of videos from Google on their new virtual reality experience called Tango. So they have a number of use cases here. So, for example, first one is you can turn your world into a playground or reimagine the space around you, and then just some general of what you could ultimately end up doing with Tango. So the idea behind this is it brings VR to everyone, and you will no longer need, you know, a complicated headset, just your standard mobile phone, and you can experience augmented reality. Like, for example, what they show on the game one is you controlling a series of dominoes with your smartphone, and it basically lays it out onto the table in front of you. So it's a way of gaming without necessarily having a physical game right in front of you. That's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
And then for reimagining the space around you, Dave, you might find this one interesting, but they're remodeling a bedroom, so you can imagine this being taken to the realm of architecture.
Oh, sure, yeah. That's kind of the cutting edge right now in the industry is definitely the augmented reality market, and there's actually a few apps out there where you can kind of place your phone using, you know, GPS and whatnot, place your phone on a wall or take a measurement or whatever, or even just take a floor plan or something like that. And it will sort of render, even if you can place furniture, if you just have an empty house, you can place furniture within the room and whatnot and see what it looks like. You can see paint colors and stuff. That's kind of more on the sales side in, you know, realty and real estate and whatnot. But still, I mean, the fact remains is,
That's what they're showing Tango doing here. So.
Yeah, in the industry, augmented reality is really becoming, it's really up and coming, and I think it's definitely has potential. At least, in all honesty, I feel like augmented reality, at least today, has more functionality in terms of functionality, if that makes sense, rather than entertainment. I think the gaming industry still has a little bit ways to go before it really accepts virtual reality. I think virtual reality and augmented reality is really going to thrive in the everyday sort of thing. You know, you see on TV and all the sci-fi stuff, you know, you come into the kitchen and, you know, you can have your emails pulled up on your fridge or on the wall or something like that, or some sort of virtual reality to where it's functional as opposed to putting on goggles and having a, you know, hunting ghosts or
and
something
like
that.
And with this going,
you know,
purely based on the smartphone, it's something that everyone can access. So,
sure.
Yeah. All right. Tannis, you ever look into VR or anything like that for gaming at all or expansions?
No, I haven't because I had been under the impression, like with Oculus and stuff, that it's very expensive. But then I have been excited with the PS4 version that is coming out, although I don't own a PS4. But I want to know, when are the holodecks coming, Shane? That's what I want.
Exactly. That's what I
want. One of those.
Yeah, that's the ultimate in terms of virtual reality and immersion. And it's just unfortunate that we're not quite there yet. So, but I think the Oculus devices go for around $600 or something like that. So, I mean, if you were building a PC, you could definitely budget that in, but the thing is VR, you know, kind of at the point where 3D movies were a number of years ago, as in we think it's going to be the thing, but then it turns out exactly not being the thing going forward, so we'll have to wait and see on that. But alrighty, Our last piece of tech news is related to the Apple App Store and some changes being made on the developer side and on the user side. So to start off with, developers will be able to offer subscriptions to all kinds of applications. Previously, it was limited to things like Netflix and magazines. And so basically, you could see subscription-based apps coming as early as September. And then with this, developers will get to keep a larger percentage of the profit pie if they can keep you on as a subscriber for a year. So then right now it's a 70-30 mix. And if they can hold you for a year, the developer will receive 85% of the revenue rather than 70%. So that's a reason for developers, I guess, to stick with the iOS App Store. And we can assume that this will, of course, be featured at next week's Apple conference and probably start making its way into the App Store come September or later this year. So there's that. And also, they're going to be bringing advertisements to the Apple App Store, specifically the search. So what do you guys think of this search in the Apple App Store?
Advertisements?
Yeah, advertisement for apps, of course.
Right. I don't know. It just all comes down to money talks, you know?
Yeah.
It's just one of those things that advertising in general is kind of just, you know, I think we all know where we all stand on advertising, especially from a consumer standpoint.
Yeah, and it's going to be done through an auction point of view. So it won't be, you know, that some obscure Russian company can put up an app on there just, you know, for the hell of it. It's going to be for people who actually, you know, want to, you know, target that market.
Sure.
So that's positive in a way, but I think that it doesn't necessarily address the core problems that the App Store has today of being filled with lots of garbage. Which wasn't true a number of years ago, but there's just so much garbage on the App Store these days. It's embarrassing.
Yeah.
I mean, you look for something and you get all these free knockoff apps made in China and whatnot, and they don't work. And then I just wish that the search would work better so that applications that are worthy have people who have downloaded them, who have reviewed them positively, are getting elevated to the front of search rather than, you know, just these things that are out there to make a quick buck. So, but that's the state of the App Store. And I think that the state of app in general, because I'm going to ask you guys a question. When was the last time you installed an app on your smartphone?
Weeks.
Oh gosh, yeah. A month or so, maybe.
Yeah,
it's not something we do often these days. So it kind of shows that apps are mature now. So it's not something that we can go crazy about.
Alrighty.
Anything else on that one, or shall we just move on to our final segment?
Let's move it.
Okay, so skill of the month, the crafting skill of the month. Currently, Parnassius is in first place with 3.1 million XP gained. Second place is Poison Nova with 951,000. And third place is GemND52 with 473,000 experience. You guys didn't sign up for this one, did you?
I did not.
Why not?
Mostly because I have been taking a bit of a break from RS, so I obviously didn't expect me to or expect myself to be on that much. So I mean, I guess I could have, but to anybody that didn't sign up with the excuse of money, Elf City is pretty much AFKable. It's not necessarily the best way, but it definitely still gets you into ranks.
Yeah, you can definitely be up there with that.
Yeah.
Tannis, you done any crafting recently?
Let's see, when did I get 99? A year ago? About a year ago.
So that's your answer.
See, and there'd be another reason for prestige mode. If you wanted to just start training again, you could do that and level up and use things you might have missed along the way. So that's my core argument for prestige mode right there. But
I'm waiting for just the right. I'm like every month, I'm like, no, not the right one yet. Like I'm waiting for just the right skill. Like I don't know. It's just gonna hit me. I'm gonna be like, yes,
skill
here we
right
go.
Yep.
What skill is that specifically?
I don't know. Probably construction. That's my favorite skill. That would have the most meaning to me if I won. So, or Slayer. I mean, I enjoy that the most. So, I don't know. It's hard, you know. It's a toss-up.
Well, following from that, we do have two achievements this week. X-Blades got 120 Invention on the 6th, and Touchpad Pro got 120 Smithing on the 5th. So excellent. Congratulations to the both of you. Two level 120s.
Yeah, congratulations.
Awesome. Yeah, those are nice. All right, and as you guys have noticed, we are entering the second half of the year now, so I have pulled out and dusted off the clip show form for 2016. Yes, you know, we might be looking at the clips for the end of the year already, but, I mean, along the way.
Nice to keep a running
tour. Yeah, it is, and if you find something amusing or entertaining, or you think something that we should just, you know, reiterate once again at the end of the year, head on over to update.rsbnb.com/clips, fill out the form, include the episode number, the time, or if you don't know the exact time, just give us a general idea and tell us what the clip is and why you feel it should be in there. Then if you want credit, include your forum name, RuneScape name, or Twitter handle, and we will give you the credit you deserve for giving us that clip. So that's update.rsbnb.com/clips. You can fill out the form, and we will use these clips in December. So there we go. All right. So, Tanis, you have a pick of the week for us.
I do. It's probably about 3 weeks now, I think, 3 weeks or maybe even a month that this game has been out. But my pick of the week is Doom. If you were around to play the original Doom back in, I think it's like mid-90s, 95, 96, yep. It's just a classic game, just an awesome game. And it's, you know, we're so used to like bad reboots that when a good one comes along, it's really nice. And, this is actually it's a pretty good one. It captures, what was good about the original Dooms, but it really brings it into a modern age with the graphics. And the reason that probably the number one reason that this is my pick of the week is its campaign. There are so many multiplayer shooters out there. You get lost in the mix, but this one has a campaign, and it's a really good campaign. It could get a little repetitive at times, but I've enjoyed every minute of it. It's just a throwback, and it's just blood and guts everywhere. I mean, come on, you know, it's just great.
So it's basically, I guess, then, if they were going to make Doom in 2016, it's what Doom would look like with modern graphics and everything like that.
Yeah, essentially. Because, I mean, they really did good.
Yeah, because I remember that was a pretty graphic game back in the day, but aside from that, the computers really weren't able to do it that well. So just imagine what they can do today with how real everything is. So I'm just looking at the trailer right now.
Oh yeah, you don't even have to imagine. I mean, you're grabbing arms and ripping them off, and just it's insane. It's just pure carnage, and it's fun. It's really fun.
All right, and of course, If blood and heavy gore is not your thing, it's probably not the game for you. But if you're a fan of the original Doom or anything like that along the way, you could probably give it a look. PC, obviously, but do they have console versions, do you know? Or?
Yes, they
yeah.
do.
Yep.
Okay. All right. So I guess that's a game that everyone could ultimately get behind. Yeah, it looks actually pretty good from the gameplay preview here. So.
Yeah, it's very fast paced. You know, I mean, you're moving. It's just so much like the original, but better. Like, I really can't say more about it.
Which is what you'd expect given modern technology and everything like that.
So, absolutely.
Yeah, and multiplayer mode too. Wonder how long that's going to stick around for, because, you know, multiplayer in some games only works for a few months, and then people move off it to something else until the next Call of Duty like that comes around. So
yeah, they had an open beta for a couple weekends, showcased the multiplayer. Now, no one had seen anything else of the game. No one had seen any of the campaign stuff, but they did open the multiplayer, and that kind of got ragged on a little bit. I don't know why, because it's just like any other arena shooter that I've ever seen. But I think it was like a newer generation of FPS players that didn't understand Doom. You know, cause okay. It had a very the multiplayer a lot like Quake 2 or something.
Yeah,
like
that's actually what I was thinking just looking at the video here. That was the first thing that jumped into my mind.
The unfortunate thing is a lot of these multiplayers and the betas, everybody complains because all they've played is Call of Duty. So if a game isn't like Call of Duty, they'll complain about it. They don't really have that sort of perspective on, well, this is a different style, this is a different environment. You know, this isn't about kill streaks and doing all this. It's, you know, a completely, you know, the developers are going for a completely different different style and just gameplay in general. And I feel like a lot of this, a lot of the community, especially in the FPS realm, just wants every game to be like a reskin of Call of Duty. And that's unfortunate, yeah. But I mean, it is what it is. So you kind of have to take it with a grain of salt, especially for those of you who really like to read game reviews and whatnot. I try to typically stay away from them. Just because everybody has their niche, and you know, just because somebody else doesn't like it doesn't mean it's a bad game, because it typically just means they're not fully understanding what the developer's intent was. So it's I was reading the same stuff about that, how the multiplayer was kind of eh, but then I stepped back and I was like, well, okay, is it eh because it's not like something was used to, because a lot of people, oh, it's different, oh, we don't like it, you know, as opposed to sort of accepting it for what it is and polishing it depending on what the developer was actually striving for. So anyway, so we'll see how long it lasts for sure.
Yep. All right. Well, you can find at doom.com.
Awesome.
Go ahead, Dennis.
Oh, I was just the very last thing with the multiplayer, you can become a demon and just one-hit people to splat everywhere. A lot of fun. Give it a try.
All right. Well, that's Doom. Pick of the week definitely goes back to an old 1990s classic. All right. So moving on to what have we been doing. Let's start with you, Tannis. What have you been doing this week on RS or otherwise?
I have been doing a lot of fishing for invention so that I can basically AFK that and work really hard on my Chronicle game, because I have a goal this summer. I want in those world championships. I really want in those world championships. So
oh, yeah.
I am playing lots of Chronicle and doing invention on the side.
You happy with the way Chronicle's going?
I'm very happy with it. Yes, I felt so good. Like looking at Steam reviews, like 2 or 3 days later, I'm like, wow, it's holding up. I didn't know how that community would react to it, but it seems to be doing really well. I'm happy with the game. I think they've done a good job.
Excellent. I need to get back into it, but for me, it's that I want to do it while I'm playing RS and, you know, just the multiple computer thing, so tablet would be ideal, and not for OS 10 yet, so hopefully it'll come around shortly by the end of the summer, but we'll wait and see.
I think they mentioned that.
Beta this summer for mobile. So. Alrighty. How about you, Dave? What have you been up to?
Not a whole lot. As everybody probably knows, I've been taking a bit of a break from RS, but funny enough, it seems like I haven't missed too much with the updates. I've been rather lackluster lately, so that's kind of nice to know. But yeah, nothing really too crazy again, just busy with work. I mean, that's really pretty much it. Just doing some other, playing around with some other games, but not too much with RS, and just keeping busy and making my way into the summer. So that's pretty much, hopefully I should be back into my RS groove fall or so. I'm just giving myself a nice little break, but other than that, just kind of cruising. So
alrighty. Well, as for me this week on RS, resume the herb farming and, you know, just calculating the awful numbers to get to 120 herb lore. as it is, I can get there slowly but surely by way of farming my own herbs and purchasing the nest and still making a profit along the way, so that's good. But doing that requires a huge amount of herbs, purchased, so that's going to obviously require me to get into a schedule and everything like that, just like I did back in the herb farming seasonal high score, which we had, you know, insane amounts of herbs gathered by people. People were not sleeping for that, which just blew me out of the water, because I was basically hitting every run I could when I was up and able to. So, but there's that. And aside from that, hit level 63 invention, so that's good. I might switch to combat, but we'll wait and see on that. I'm not entirely sure if I want to switch to combat or keep cutting logs at the crystal trees and siphoning off at level 12 now, since I have the ability to do that. So, and you know, I just don't want to go near waterfall fishing. Sorry, Tannis, but that's not something I'm going to do.
Hey, but that Rod-O-Matic, man.
I know.
400 and some K I know, pop.
But, but no, we're not using waterfall fishing. Anyways, that's it for this week's episode of RSBNB Update. We'll be back next week to discuss the anniversary of RSBNB Update. RSBNB Update entering its 11th year, or rather finishing its 11th year. So, yeah.
Hey.
Good stuff.
Yeah. So we'll be back next week for that. And thank you, Tannis, for joining Dave and myself on the show. Always good to have you.
Well, thanks for having me.
And we'll see you next week, everyone. Thank you for sharing your time with us.
See ya.
Bye-bye.